This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence. Your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLaro5. Today's show is brought to you by French Lick Resorts, Man O' War Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Carroll and Stone Insurance, and Edwin Watts Golf. Now, let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Hey, hey, hey. It's Backspin Golf. Good morning, everyone. Sunday morning, calm. I'll be out there in roughly an hour and 15 minutes. Kearney Hill yesterday. No rain over the weekend. Yay. And I get to start my day with, I'll just say it. Maybe it's sappy. One of my favorite people on this planet Earth, Perry French, Perry French.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As you are one of my favorite people, we always get together and just pick up, and it's just kind of a fun.
It's amazing.
It is.
It's like we saw each other 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Oh, wait, we did. Wait a minute. You you're a busy guy.
Yep.
This is the season.
This is the season. Mm-hmm.
So anytime we can get together, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And we have, this is going to be very interesting. Very interesting. First of all, good morning, Chris Mascaro. I believe I didn't say that last show, I think. And the whole week has been off for me.
Okay.
If you want to listen to a great podcast, go to podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, and listen to Next on the Tee. Every week, fantastic. Good morning, Chris Mascaro. Anyway, that's just one of my public service announcements for golfers.
Right.
That's what I like to do. Anyway, we are going to talk this morning about a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not any, just any golf
course.
No, no. Course.
This is not any golf course.
I pride myself on my knowledge of golf, golf courses, golfers, different things.
Mm.
I mean, I like to think I know some stuff. I don't know anything about this freaking golf course. And you just told me briefly, and I'm so anxious to hear what you're going to say about this. So,
well, thank you. And there's some pretty neat things that the PGA Tour has had a huge change in schedule this year, as we know. We've talked about that ad nauseum with the majors and stuff. But as the fill in the blanks part of the schedule, and I'm not one that sits in where I would look over
the beginning.
I don't look over the schedule and go, oh my gosh, look at that. I might see which event is.
We know where they're playing the majors.
Right. So. Yeah, that's what I look to see, as most people would. So the part of this I was looking into. This week's, event, which is the Rocket Mortgage Classic.
The Rocket Mortgage
Mortgage Classic. It's falling in between the majors. We had a really neat event last week with the Travelers, and a lot of players who played in the Open came to play. Pretty unique
big
that
field.
They did. Big
right.
field, great field, and the Travelers just really earned a nice reputation out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the golf course was pretty dynamic and a neat tournament to watch. Sunday, Keegan almost came back and cut.
He did, and he's from there. I mean, right in the middle of New England.
And so, in spite of
Ches Reavy, great story.
Sunday morning, the leaders got six shots. Who'd want to watch? Well, I'll tell you what, if you didn't, you missed a pretty neat golf event,
You did.
So it was fun to see that. And Reavy, Ches played phenomenal, steady.
250 starts on the PGA Tour, and he won
almost
his first.
11 years.
Unbelievable.
The longest, second longest between victories on the PGA Tour is Ches Reavy's 11, almost 11 years.
Right.
The history piece of that puzzle was the first one is Francis Ouimet, and he is an amateur. Of course, he won the US Open.
Right.
He won 11 and a half years later on the PGA Tour. Open. It's like crazy stuff like that. That was 1904 to 1915. So 1915, interestingly enough, this is where this week's golf course to me caught in a little perspective. And I said, let's take a look at Detroit Golf Club. I've heard of it, like you, heard of Detroit Golf Club.
But I'm not even sure
Detroit hasn't hosted an event since Oakland Hills hosted the U.S. Open, and that's kind of what you think about when you think about golf in Michigan, which is a great state for golf.
Fantastic, but
the city of Detroit, when you think golf, you don't think Detroit.
Correct. Okay. And this is the first event, actually, that's taken place inside the city of Detroit.
Wow.
PGA Tour event.
Wow.
So Donald Ross is the course designer.
Wait, who?
Yeah, the Donald
Ross. I
think
I've heard that name before.
So that gets my intrigue. And for the not the non-casual golf fan, the one like myself who watches pretty much every week, at least a Portland tournament to see how it's shaking out, who's going to win, to see a Donald Ross golf course on a PGA Tour event that was built in opened up in 1915, host a PGA Tour event, I'm very intrigued to
see.
Wait
a minute, 1915?
Yeah, 1915. It's 104 years old. It's going to be really neat to see how it holds up to the test of time, right? It should be a phenomenal treat for me to watch and see how the greens. I've played a handful of Donald Ross courses. We have one here in town, Idlehour Country Club.
Yes.
It's a tremendous golf course, and it's obviously
don't
private.
Forget,
yeah.
Right, 2 hours and 15 minutes away, French Lick.
There you go. Exactly. You are
which I've
sponsors.
Played many times.
Yeah, tremendous property. Okay. So anytime I get to see a Donald Ross golf course, certainly from a TV coverage, will be pretty unique, and certainly the best players – some of the best players in the world, should be interesting. So why isn't hosting an event? It's like Detroit. They haven't hosted one. But the history of Detroit Golf Club goes back to when the first group of professionals played on there. First of all, their head golf pro, their original head golf pro, was Alec Ross. Brother of Donald Ross.
Oh!
Who was the head pro there until 1945, until he retired. So he was there for 30 years. And interestingly enough, and I didn't know this, that Alec Ross won the 1907 U.S. Open. The 1907 U.S. Open was won by the Alec Ross, and his brother finished 10th in that event. So Donald Ross, the designer, was quite an accomplished player.
I don't think I ever knew that, actually.
Right.
Okay.
And so what I thought was interesting about Alec Ross winning the event in 1907 he shot four rounds in the 70s, which to me is phenomenal, with the equipment being played, to shoot four rounds in the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so interestingly enough, that's kind of – and the host of golf professionals there, pretty unique to get into. But the event that was played there was hosted in 1940 and 41, when the war just started.
Right.
We got into the war. And so they didn't have any type of professional event going on.
Right.
But Walter Hagen, who was the captain of the Ryder Cup team, said, I've got a team together that it's unbeatable. And one of the players that he shunned on that team was Gene Sarazen.
Ah.
So Gene, in his competitive nature, said, listen, I'll put a team together and we'll play you in a head-to-head, home against home, if you will.
Right.
And I'll put my team together and we'll play you. And so they conducted a challenge match that took place at Detroit Golf Club.
Oh, this is so good.
And they did it 2 years. The first year, Hagen's team did win the match.
Yeah.
Gene's team had a few players you might know, Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, but Nelson and Snead were on the winning team for Hagen that first year.
All right, so, now hold the timeout. I'm taking a 30 here. Hold on. You're just rushing over this. Okay, so we have a challenge match with Walter Hagen.
Captaining.
Who?
Well, Byron Nelson and Stan Snead were the two main cogs that were mentioned.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
on the
Gene
other side.
Gene Sarazen had Bobby Jones recruited by him, Ben Hogan. So in the second year, they came back, again hosted a Detroit Golf Club.
Yeah.
Sarazen's team won the match. Upset, if you will.
Of course.
And Hagen famously said, I've got to go back and look at the scoreboard. I just can't believe this happened. You know, so Hagen in his own way wasn't about to accept defeat. Pretty neat story about Detroit Golf Club. That's kind of the wrap on that where, you know, I think it'll be an interesting view, certainly for me. And so whether you catch it on Sunday afternoon, just to see who wins.
Right.
And speaking of that, the field has, to me, I think one of the feel-good stories of the year that happened last week at the Travelers.
And that would be who?
Zach Sucher, who happens to be a Strixon staff guy.
Right.
And
are you.
Yes, as a staff player on tour. So it was fun to see him emerge after two great rounds on Friday and Saturday as the leader going into Saturday's round. And the story was 18 months on the IR, basically a surgery, couldn't play for 18 months, had playing on a medical exemption, trying to earn enough FedEx points to keep his card.
Keep his card.
Had success on the Korn Ferry Tour. Let's not get into that. I can't believe I remember the name. So anyhow, he shows
Corn
up
with a K, K by
with
the
a
way.
K, yeah. Yeah. And he shows up on Saturday and goes out the front nine and is blitzing the field. I think he shoots 30 and misses a 6-footer on
nine. Right.
And meanwhile, playing aside him is Chez Revi, who thinks and dunks it around, misses some putts, shoots even par. He's got a 6-shot lead as we step on the 10th tee box. And you're going, wow, this is quite a story.
And nobody knows who this
guy
is.
Guy's, and then all of a sudden, it just got crazy out of control. Probably one of the most unique flips in a golf tournament the guys on TV were almost
They said that. They were trying to remember when. Because it was a 12-shot swing,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was. Well, initially it was a 9-shot swing in the three holes from six down, Chez Revi goes birdie, birdie, birdie to start the back nine.
Right.
Phenomenal start. And our man, Zach, goes bogey, double, double. Has a couple of golfing finger of fates that weren't too nice to him, and he didn't negotiate him well.
Right.
Compounded, and you think, oh my gosh, here this kid's going to shoot a million and shoot himself completely out of the tournament and really blow his chances. The long and the short of it, as we know, is he came back, finished off, even though he shot 41, made a lot of pars.
Right.
And then the next day, goes back in that same back nine that he shot 41 on and shoots 30. I just got a chill.
Yeah.
That's amazing dynamic for that player to step on that 10th tee, knowing what he had shot the day before.
Right.
And goes out there and chips in on his last shot.
The greatest. That.
And the vaults him to second place, and he's on his way now from a.
Right.
From getting his. He's 126 in the money list. He's going to get a couple more starts.
Right.
He's going to get his card.
Absolutely.
And he's playing this week. So I'm going to watch his go.
If that doesn't tell you about. We kid around all the time. Somebody will make a statement while you're playing, like, I'm going to birdie these two holes. And I'm like, excuse me, the golf gods are listening. You're hitting it in the water.
Right.
I mean, you're dead. If this doesn't tell you about something greater than just the game, golf clubs and balls.
Sure.
What's inside that guy, what he did, as you said, I got chills when you said it too. I mean, to do that is remarkable.
Right. His personal perseverance. To come back from injury, and again, he's 36. That's
right, he's not a
kid. He's not 28 years or 25.
Right.
This is an injury that's career-threatening.
Yes.
And to persevere through the rehab of that, get his game back to this level.
To the point where he could lead.
To this level, using, you know, when it's time, when you raise the flag and say, okay, I want to cash in on my medical exemption, PGA Tour, you better be ready to go because you only got 6 events.
Right.
And so He you know, was under the gun.
That's how many it is? So when your medical stops, you get six?
Okay. And so, wow. I mean, just the whole story. So perseverance, certainly personal.
Right.
This kid, they say his personality is, you meet him, as nice a guy as you'd want to meet. And we talked about Gary Woodland from the previous week.
Right.
You know, these are things that we watch them on TV. They look stoic. They're working. They're trying to get it done.
These are the great stories.
Yeah, the stories of how they actually get there are more impressive, and then to be able to overcome that adversity and literally 24 hours later, it's a complete flip-flop, and that was great. So kudos to Zach. I'm looking forward to watching him play. I certainly have double interest that he's one of our staff guys to see him play and play well and earn his card and make a run.
Speaking of that, just because you are a Strixon, I have to say I'm a little thrown off sitting here with you today.
Yeah.
You have a beautiful shirt on. You know, every week I like to comment on what you're wearing because, frankly, that's the important. It's how you look. That's important. I don't see Strix on Cleveland Golf Zexio Golf, which most every time you have on. This time, are you just trying to impress me? You have your PGA, what does it say under it? PGA
Kentucky section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shirt
yeah, it's a neat shirt that we got.
What a big shot you are. Yeah, it is.
It's a tournament favorite that we got. We played in one of our events. The sponsor was Cutter Buck.
Nice.
And they were nice enough to give us a shirt.
I just like to point these things out. Anyway.
But I'm a proud member of the PGA American.
As you should be.
In the Kentucky section.
I just want to throw in, before we leave for the day, I just want to throw in that last weekend, speaking of Strixon, another incredible feel-good story. On the LPGA Tour, the PGA Championship, a major for them. Hannah Green, Australian, wins. She's a Strixon member.
Right.
And that story, what she did on Sunday, was fantastic.
Yeah, she did.
Have never won a tournament.
And she stumbled in the middle of that round, looked like she was going to give it away, got caught, made a couple of birdies, and then up and down on 18 was one of the gutsiest up and downs.
Out of a bunker.
Out of a bunker at Hazeltine, major championship. And
it was fantastic. Yeah, it was great.
Stuff. So apologize not giving her more kudos about that, but that was a great run for Hannah. And anytime we can get one of our staff players to win a major, holy cow.
That's kind of
I should have been spending
deal.
The whole 20 minutes talking about it.
I know. We do. All right. Well, I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
If I can catch you am I running around because right. you're...
They say it's harder to hit a moving target. So.
Thanks, Perry French, Perry French.
See you.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.
Welcome back. As we always say here on Backspin Golf, many of the people that we've had on the show over the last 6 years that we've been doing this have become very good friends of ours and repeat, what word should I use, Sean? Repeat guests. Yeah, that's good. But one of the great things is when we find new friends who then become older friends and they become on the show. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. I have discovered somebody on Twitter, as I usually do. Her name is Julie Williams. You can follow her on Twitter at @AGC_Jules. And we'll talk more about something else that she's doing. This is what it says. I'll get to you in a minute, Julie. Hold on. It says, golf writer and general golf nerd, yeah, whatever, following amateur and college golf for @AmateurGolf.com. Here's the interesting thing to me. Still chasing a sub-5 handicap. First of all, hi, Julie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Is that true? All right, is that true?
That is true. I'm working on it, but I'm not getting there. So hopefully soon.
Yeah, but if you're chasing a 5 handicap, that means you're pretty close probably. That's what I'm getting at.
I am pretty close.
Oh, yeah. Boy. All right. Well, it's been great having you on the show. Thanks a lot because, you know, anybody that's... Well, anyway. All right. Let's start there. Let's start because the writing that you do and following amateur golf as closely as you do with AmateurGolf.com and Twitter and all the things that you're doing, how did you get started? Did you play high school golf? Did you play college golf? How did you get started in golf?
So I did both of those things. I played high school golf. You know, my dad was a good player. My grandpa was a really good player. And so, you know, we just went out to the golf course in the evenings with my dad. My older sister also played college golf. And so when it came time to graduate high school, I thought, this is too much fun. I have to keep doing this. And so, I grew up in Missouri, and there was, of course, a fantastic journalism school at the University of Missouri. But I was not good enough to play for the University of Missouri, so... I went to a Division II school, and it was just the best 4 years because we just played golf every day, and I went to class sometimes, and then I worked for the university newspaper while I was there, and so it put me in a really kind of unique skill set when I was ready to graduate, and right out of college, I found Golf Week magazine. And I spent a summer there, and it before I knew it, I'd been there for almost 7 years.
Wow.
So it worked out pretty well.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love stories like that, especially the part about being able to play golf every day. And now you live in, do you live in Florida now?
I do live in Florida, yes.
Whereabouts in Florida?
So I am just east of Orlando.
Okay. So you still get to play golf every day if you want to. I mean, you know, you could.
True.
Yeah, all right.
I could. I'm coaching a high school girls golf team, so I'm at least out there every day.
Now, you said that when we first got in touch, you said that you have been doing that. How long has that been going on for you?
So I'm coming up on my third season. We play in the fall, so we'll start 1st of August.
It sounds like, I mean, just, I don't know you at all, except for the little bit that we talked before and now. But it seems like that would be something that I could see you doing for a long time. I could see you working with kids and really enjoying that.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And, you know, I try to set them up. You know, some of the players you have, and they'll play every day in the summer, and they just get addicted to it. And other girls, you know, come out, and it's a social thing. But mm-hmm. what I try to do with them is prepare them that they will never be afraid to go out on the golf course in a business opportunity. So we talk about etiquette, and we talk about, you know, I want them to be able to talk about the game. And I just want them to feel comfortable on the golf course so that later in life, if they get an opportunity or there's a door that could open, you know, if they know mm-hmm. something about golf, I want them to be able to take it.
Well, it's a great outlook, actually, and it will help them as they go through life. Talk to me a little Absolutely. Bit about amateur golf, and the stuff that you follow is really so interesting. Tell me a little bit about how you decide which amateur events you're going to cover.
So, you know, so I love amateur golf because I feel like I'm getting a preview of the guys and the women. A big part of the women go right to the LPGA Tour. But I'm seeing these players kind of before they get there, before they get on TV, and before, you know, some of the major magazines pick them up. So what I do in terms of covering, a lot of it is regional, you know, and it works well for me being in Florida because in the winter and in the kind of late fall, a lot of golf is coming down my way. So I'm fortunate to be able to cover, I don't know if you've heard of the Orange Blossom Tour, but
yes.
There are a series of women's events, the Dixie, the Harder Hall, the Sally, the Jones Doherty. All that comes down to me in January and February. And so I love starting my year that way because I get to see the college players in the off season. You get to see the up-and-coming players like Alexa Pano. I'm super impressed by her.
Yeah.
Saw her a couple of times. So I do a large part of it regionally. I always love going to the NCAA championships. That's my absolute favorite week of the year because I love team golf. So I always book that on my calendar. And then really for the first time this summer, you know, it's a Walker Cup year. So the summer tournaments, like, you know, I was at the Dogwood at the start of the month. I was at Sunny Hannah the week after that. This week I'm watching kind of on the scoreboard the North and South,
mm-hmm.
Which is at Pinehurst. And then I'll try to get to a U.S. Amateur at the end of the summer. So I'm trying to go the places where the strongest fields will be, but also kind of some of those little niche tournaments, you know, like the Harder Hall and the Sally. So I try to see a good array of fields so I can see a lot of players at different levels of the game.
Well, it seems like you're absolutely doing that. We're speaking with Julie Williams, golf writer and amateur golf expert. I'm just going to say it. And if you follow her on Twitter at @AGC_Jules or at amateurgolf.com. Is that right?
Yep, amateurgolf.com.
Okay. You mentioned the Walker Cup. Now explain to the people that listen to the show, and we have many of them who may not know what the Walker Cup is. Explain exactly what the Walker Cup is.
So I the best way I think to describe it is the Walker Cup is the Ryder Cup for amateurs.
Right.
So it's the U.S. team versus Great Britain and Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the 10 best male amateurs, you might say, from each side of the pond there. And it's played every 2 years. This year, it's overseas. They're playing at Royal Liverpool in Hoylake, England.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for, I think, our team, you know, the U.S. team, to have some knowledge of links golf or at least be prepared, you know, be versatile players to be able to go over and compete on a links-style course. And actually, one of the things I'm very interested in, and I'm watching what players I think are going to make the team. The top three Americans in the World Amateur Golf Ranking will get in automatically, but there is a 17-year-old named Akshay Bhatia, we were expecting to go pro in January, but he's holding out for the Walker Cup team. He went and played the British Amateur last week, which was at Portmarnock in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really brilliant, you know, just setting aside a little piece of his summer to go over and kind of learn links golf. So that's the kind of, if over selecting the team, that's the kind of initiative I'd be looking for.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the way the Ryder Cup used to be played, for those that don't know. It used to be the United States against Great Britain and Ireland, and we won the Ryder Cup every year for seven decades or something, and then they said, well, this is no good anymore, so we got to expand it. Here's something else that I wanted to ask you about. Did you get a chance to go to Augusta for the inaugural Women's Amateur Championship at Augusta this year?
I did. I was there all week.
Oh.
It was fantastic.
When I spoke to you before on the phone, I said this was something I wanted to talk about. Watching that tournament, it was an experience, I think, for those of us that love the game, and it should have happened a long time ago. I guess, you know, we'll take it as it comes, and great, they did it, but it should have happened a long time ago. But that tournament at Augusta made more fans, I think, for not only amateur golf, but women's golf, than anything they could have done.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think, you know, if somebody is maybe not sold on that statement, I would point toward, I mean, you have two celebrities who basically came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
The two women who played in the final group, Maria Fassi and Jennifer Kupcho, who both turned professional and qualified for the U.S. Women's Open and are now starting to play their, you know, start halfway through their rookie season on the LPGA. But I cannot remember a couple of rookies, any rookie, who came out on the LPGA with more fanfare after 4 years of college.
Yeah.
Because then you look at Lexi Thompson, of course, mm-hmm. Lydia Ko, Jessica Korda, but we're talking about different backgrounds and different scenarios there. Fassi and Kupcho earned their LPGA card at the LPGA Q Series. The LPGA sort of redid their qualifying structure this year. And for the first time, they gave college players, because they play that qualifying school in the middle of the college season.
Right.
But they gave college players the opportunity to defer their membership. They could finish the college season and not pass on the status that they had earned. They would just start during the season a little bit later. And only two players took that option, and it was Kupcho and Fassi. And I thought that it was fantastic that they had the stage, a huge stage,
yeah,
maybe bigger than what they'll ever again see playing on the LPGA, and that was the story they told. And I think, I mean, I got my Sports Illustrated today for in the mail, and I opened it up, and I'm looking at faces in the crowd, and just looked at Maria Fassi was one of them they featured. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know how often women's golf is featured in Sports Illustrated. So I think that is a really good statement on the reach that Augusta National Women's Amateur had.
And for me, you'll get to know me. I'm a sap. Everybody that listens to my daily show and Backspin Golf knows that I get affected by emotionally by things as well as athletically and sports-wise. That final day and watching those two who were battling for the championship, the inaugural championship, the sportsmanship that was exhibited, them walking up the 18th fairway together, that picture of them together on the last green, hugging each other, was everything that we love about the game of golf. It was about talent and perseverance and yet that kind of friendship and sportsmanship. And it said everything to me that we want from golf, I think.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And knowing those two women, you know, that is 100% who they are.
Yeah.
You know, the situation did not change them. I did not feel like they were performing for the cameras. I thought that was, I mean, that is genuinely Maria Fassi and Jennifer Kupcho. So, I mean, you could not have scripted it, I don't think, any better than it went off.
Agreed. All right, here's what I'm going to do, if it's okay with you. As we go through the rest of this summer, when is the Walker Cup?
The Walker Cup is in September.
Okay.
I can't tell you.
No, it's okay.
Dates.
I just
know that, but
ballpark. Yeah, no, not the dates. I mean,
early
just
September.
Okay, early September. I would love to have you on the show again soon, and we'll catch up on other amateur things going on here, as well as anything you'd like to talk about. And definitely around the Walker Cup, either before it. Now, here's the big question. Are you going?
I'm not going.
Oh.
I will be watching from afar.
Okay.
I'm planning on it.
Okay, but here's what I'm going to do. Because we are now friends, I'm going to go and I'll report for you. How about that?
Okay.
Oh boy.
We'll talk.
Let's
boy, do
that. I wish I could do that. we will talk again really soon, and thank you so much for joining those that have joined me on Backspin Golf. It's great to get to know you, and I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Backspin Golf on this Sunday morning. Now, periodically, and it's been too long, and that's my fault. Periodically, our friend Keith Hirschland has joined us on Backspin Golf, as well as Matthew and Mikey. Matthew and Mikey mostly because he's a world-renowned author. And one of the, wait, before I introduce, before you say hello, let me finish my introduction, please. Thank you. And stop laughing. Three of the best books you will ever read, starting with Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In, his Tales of the Golf Channel. He was there from the very beginning for many years. The Flower Girl Murder, which is fantastic, should be a movie. We've talked about that. I got to get moving. Big Lies, which is also great. That should be a movie. And a manuscript that I have that I'm reading called Murphy, which is will be a movie. So we have three movies that were, well, actually, Keith, Cover Me Boys, I'm Going In would make a great movie too, don't you think?
Well, there certainly are enough stories to get enough people in trouble that it would probably be pretty entertaining.
You know what? I'm just thinking, now you were with ESPN too, you've done all kinds of stuff. This might be a great like 30 for 30 type something on Amazon or Netflix or one of those.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree. I just, you know, I need friends in high places like you to get those balls rolling, because I have no idea how that all works.
All I know is that you do brilliant work. That's what I know. Now,
well. You are way too kind.
Yeah,
you are way too
kind.
Sure. I appreciate it as always.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'll get to we're talking now. I think on Matthew and Mikey, I have mentioned, even if you weren't on the air with us, I have mentioned that you have moved to Colorado Springs with your lovely bride, Sarah, who has a pretty big job mm-hmm. right now. She's the,
she
I believe
yes,
her
does.
Title, her title is CEO of the United States Olympic Committee. Is that right?
Well, it's now the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee.
That's they correct.
They officially changed the name.
Yes, which
to,
is great.
To be more inclusive of the Paralympians. Yeah.
That amazing. Is fantastic. Yep. So she has this.
And actually her title is her official title.
Yeah.
She is the CEO.
Right.
But her official title is Secretary General. She goes all over the world to with the IOC and all the other Olympic organizing committees.
Oh boy.
The folks that run these committees are called Secretaries General. So I have to refer to her around the house as Madam Secretary.
I'm sure you do, and I'm sure you don't mind that either. Is my feeling.
Not at all.
It's
a big job, and she's Yeah.
That's awesome.
She's doing a great job.
All right. So you're out there in beautiful Colorado Springs, and it is beautiful out there.
We are.
Except not this week. This week, because it's such a horrible place, Colorado Springs, you decided to get on a plane and go to the Bahamas. I mean, what for? Tell us why you're in the Bahamas, Keith.
Well, I keep trying to be retired and write my books.
Yeah.
And then these people who still work in this wonderful industry of putting golf shows on television
mm-hmm.
keep calling me and bothering me and saying, can you help us do this and that? Normally I say no, but when they say the show's in the Bahamas, I say, okay.
Yeah. And not, well, see how bright you are? And not only that.
Well,
but it's not just a show in the Bahamas. This is a pretty cool thing that you're doing down there. Why don't you tell us about who's involved with this?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a made for TV golf show that's going to air on Turner. I think it's on TBS or TNT mm-hmm. in a week or 10 days. I should know, but I don't. but it's eight NFL players, current and retired, led by Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Playing against eight NBA players, current and retired, led by Chris Paul. Huh. So one NFL, it's a match play event over three. They play three rounds of golf. And it's a match play deal set up where, you know, an NFLer goes head to head with an NBA player. So, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, looking over the, you know, it's like Adam Thielen's a two handicap.
Wow.
Rumor has it that Steph Curry's playing and he's a scratch or
yes.
a one. And,
yeah.
You know, Chris Paul's a single digit handicap. Aaron Rodgers is a single digit. They play good golf. And they are, you know, these guys.
Oh yeah,
Matthew, they're like they just want to beat each other's brains out
right.
any chance they can get.
Well,
so it's a lot of fun.
You know, it's another reason for me to hate all of them. I mean, that's how I look at things now. In my old age, is man, I hate that guy. I mean, you look, it's not enough that they have their professional athletes, current and retired. They have all this money,
right?
And they're scratch golfers yep. or they're single-digit handicappers. It's like, what else? I don't know.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's like the only thing that would be worse is if they, like, all could play, you know, Beethoven on the piano or something, which I'm guessing some of them can.
I bet that's a story you might want to highlight while you're down there doing that.
You know, I'm going to do some digging.
There you
and
go.
And I'm here. And the other thing I get to do is I get to be here with my friend Brian Anderson, who, as you know,
yes.
worked with us at Golf Channel for a handful of years. And he is now one of Turner's main play-by-play guys. So he's the talent,
yeah.
in quotes, quote unquote, talent on the
yeah,
show.
Yeah.
so
are so you, tell us.
It's always fun to be with him.
Tell us what you're doing. Are you sitting in that truck making all the decisions like you used to do?
You know, this is much easier than that. There's no truck. I'm out on the golf course following. They'll play a foursome, so two matches.
Right.
And so I will have a camera crew of three talented golf cameramen
mm-hmm.
Walking the golf course, and I'll have I'll be taking time code notes and wearing a headset and making sure that, you know, hey, camera three, you get the putt. Camera two, you get Chris Paul's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm kind of more directing,
yeah.
I guess, than producing yeah. this little shindig.
Well,
but it's only three cameras and only one group, and I get to walk around the golf course in the sunshine.
And I'm assuming you're getting paid to do this.
I think so.
Well, okay. Well, let me.
I think that was part of the deal.
Okay. I like to know these things. So all in all, you're one of the guys I hate now, too, basically, is what I'm saying.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
I only reserve
It's a love-hate thing.
Yeah, no, it's pure love. It's I only hate the people that I love in this situation is what I'm trying to say. But we've talked before about your work from the beginning of the Golf Channel and everything that entailed and how over the years – it's a completely different business now with digital stuff and shot tracers and all the stuff they have to deal with. Even something like this probably would have been inconceivable just a few years ago.
Yeah, and no doubt. I mean, the technology just didn't exist. I mean, I can remember sitting in VP's offices talking about, you know, how can we take you know, our coverage to the next level. And, you know, is there any way to, you know, can we get somebody, some really smart person to design a, you know, what we call a smart club that would give you launch angle and lie angle and
yeah.
where on the club face the ball, you know, is there somebody that can invent that? And can we talk one of the players into using it? And now it's all, that's what they're doing. It's
yeah.
amazing. It's really cool. At times a little invasive.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're always trying to figure out what else they can add, which I appreciate. But, man, the tracer's cool. All the information. It's a little information overload for me.
Yeah, but, me too.
Because I don't care what the apex of the ball is in flight. I mean, that to me means very little unless it's really windy or really, you know, there's some reason for it.
Right. But, yeah.
You know, it's just more info. People are, you know, everybody wants to know everything.
Yes.
These days. So, and it's, you know, it's at your fingertips. So they're doing a great job. I mean, you know, I don't know how much of the U.S. Open you watched. I thought the drone stuff flying over Stillwater Cove was pretty cool.
Yeah. I watched a lot of it.
Technically,
by the way.
Technically, I thought it was beautiful. Technically, yeah. I thought they did a beautiful job. I thought the pictures, and you can't go wrong at Pebble Beach.
Right. I could direct a show from Pebble Beach. I'm just saying. I mean, but there
You directed brilliantly.
Well, thank you, Keith. I think so, but apparently nobody else does except you. I think that what the whole thing about the apex, like you say, they hit the ball high. We all know they hit. I've never hit a golf ball as high as these guys launch a golf ball. We know that. The one thing that I love the shot tracer, because you can't pick the ball up until then they switch to a camera and you see the ball, you know, in the air. I love the shot tracer. I'd be okay with the shot tracer on every single shot during the tournament.
Me too.
But all
Me
the
too.
Other
I love
stuff,
it too.
Spin rates and all, you know, all the things that they're doing, I agree. It just kind of takes away from the actual stories of what's going on, which is something you always cared about.
Yeah. I mean, if it, that was kind of what we tried to, you know, we tried to really put a spotlight on, is that if we were going to do something, if we were going to have a sponsored element, if we were going to do a feature, if we were going to, I always wanted it to help promote or drive the story of the event.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just, you know, graphics for graphics' sake always drove me crazy.
Right.
And so I think we're a little bit in that realm now, but like you say, the tracer's amazing. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like, because, you know, the way we used to do, the way golf used to be broadcast was, you're right, you know, the camera was behind the player swings, impact. The next thing you see is a ball, you know, filling your screen.
Right.
in a bright blue sky. I mean, you have no idea where it's going, right?
Yep.
But that was the way it was done. And camera guys would pride themselves on how tight they could get of that ball. And these guys are really, it's really a hard thing to do.
Amazed at, actually.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
They're tremendous. And it was like, you know, this source of pride. And, you know, it's kind of like it went, people did it that way for, you know, however long, since,
right,
you know, since the 50s. And and now we're like, you can't live without the tracer. If you don't have the tracer, it's like, where's the tracer?
Yeah. Well, you know, we get spoiled pretty easily.
Yeah.
So here's another question for you. Now that you're, well, semi-retired, how much time do you actually spend watching telecasts? And when you watch them, is it hard for you to separate, you know, what you do and what you've done from just being able to watch a golf telecast? Or do you go, man, that shot sucked?
It's impossible to separate.
Yeah.
What I used to do to just being a viewer, I'm actually really bad at most, like, you don't want to, my wife can barely stand to be in the room with me when we're watching sports, because it's not just golf that I do it on.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
screaming at talent and screaming at directors, in my madness, my state of madness. But I also, I don't watch, it's amazing. I used to watch a ton of golf, and now I watch very little. I mean, I will turn it on, and if one of my friends who I, you know, still, you know, these friendships and the people that I was just fortunate enough to work with, guys like Kurt Byram and Jerry Foltz.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if those guys are on the show, I'll watch for a little bit. And then I'll text them and say, you know, don't say unbelievable, or, you know, don't, And they're like, you know, can you just go away?
No. See, it's
a love-hate relationship. But I hardly watch at all anymore. Yeah.
You know,
I watch the big event.
One of the best things to me, and like you, I am blessed to have friends like Peter Jacobson and Dottie Pepper and different people that are on broadcasts. And the most fun for me is texting them while the actual broadcast is going on. And I can't,
absolutely,
I really can't share on the air what those conversations are like. But someday you and I will compare notes, and someday you and I will sit down in a room and watch sports together, because you do exactly what I do. I yell at the TV about everything.
What's that thing where the silhouette of the guys watching the movie?
Oh yeah,
Mystery Science Theater or something like that.
Yeah,
we should do that with, you know, like have our anyway.
It would be fun.
And we could probably, with all the text that you and I combined have written to our friends broadcasting golf while they were on the air.
Oh,
that could probably be a pretty fun little book.
Oh yeah, too. All right, let's talk. Let's discuss it. Have a great rest of your time in the Bahamas. Have a safe trip back to Colorado Springs. Tell the Madam Secretary that I said hi, and I will talk to you real soon. Thanks for jumping on again.
I hope so.
Okay.
It's always fun. Thanks,
see you,
Matthew.
Pal.
Yep. Okay.
Bye.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their 5 public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play golf, Lexington.